Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters for the 19th of August 2021. I'm joined by Peter.
Thank you, Colin. Good to be here.
There's a pause there where you're like, might say something.
Is it my turn?
Anyway, today we're going to be covering how Britain is full. We've got enough nonsense, thank you. Also, the petition to stop foreign rapists from using our money to defend themselves from not getting deported back to the hellholes that they deserve to be in. And also, what did we learn from Afghanistan? Not sure, although there are some very good memes. So I think we're going to enjoy ourselves on that one. So first thing to mention is just the stuff we have on the website. So the live event section, especially. So we have the live events for the 24th and 25th of September coming up, just to make sure everyone's aware of that. Also, I need to correct myself because I said they were both in South London. Friday's in South London, Saturday's Central London. Just wanted to make that clear. But all the details are on there. Also, you'll get the specific location if you buy a ticket, and we'll email you beforehand so everyone knows where to go. But That's that.
Isn't this Dank and Carl morph into one, do they?
I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Fuck, there you go.
We're going to become one man. Dadism with a Scottish accent. Yeah. Anyway, so there's that. Also, we filmed the Mal's Great Famine Book Club yesterday, me and Bo. So they'll be edited and uploaded soon. So if you're reading along and you want to know when that's going to be up, that's going to be up soon. So you have that time. But I want to say a special thank you to the guy who told us where the rightist comment was as well. Thank you a million times, because I was really hoping to find that, and I'm glad you told us. Anyway, let's get right into it. Britain is full. That enough. No more nonsense. And the mad lad who said this is Desmond Swain, who we'll get into in a bit, who is just giving an amazing speech. But I wanted to focus on this section on the speeches in Parliament in response to the defeat in Afghanistan. Now, I blew this off initially as going to be they're all going to bang the desks about how we should have done something, and then they'll all leave, and it'll kind of, you know, not really interesting. Turns out, no, there were some interesting speeches, and I thought we'd enjoy some of them. So the first one is probably the most touching speech, let's say, from a guy who apparently fought in Afghanistan. He's now an MP. And he's looking at this from a perspective of being like, oh, God, I mean, this has got to hit home, I imagine, for him especially, and all other veterans who were involved. So let's go for this first speech.
Like many veterans, this last week has been one that has seen me struggle through anger and grief and rage, because what we've done in these last few days is we've demonstrated that it's not armies that win wars. Armies can get tactical victories and operational victories that can hold a line. It's nations that make war. Nations endure, and here we've demonstrated, sadly, that we, the West, the United Kingdom, does not. This doesn't need to be defeat, but at the moment, damn well feels like it.
Ed Davey.
So, I mean, yeah, you've got a feel for the guy. Although the idea that this is not going to be defeat, it is. It's pretty much over. Unless we're just going to run back in and get to find ourselves in the same situation.
What's what? 20 years of the Americans in there. I think $2 trillion they spent. 6,000 Americans dead. 100,000 Afghanis. And back to where you started. So utter defeat.
Like, we never really had full control of the area anyway. No. So that's the thing. So that's one speech I found some sympathy with. A speech I did not find sympathy with was from the Labour benches of that the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan has nothing to do with Islam. It's been a long time since we've heard these arguments. I don't feel like I've heard an MP trying to argue that Islam has nothing to do with Islam.
Well, Stella Creasy is an Islam expert.
Oh, pure Islamic scholar. Anyway, let's go for her amazing speech.
And yes, this is a humanitarian disaster, but it's also a human rights one. Because equality isn't just being able to leave the house alone. Those Afghan women who are doctors, who are judges, who are politicians, need us to do more than wring our hands. We've already heard that girls are being banned from school and being forced into marriages. As the quote is, the Taliban talk nice during the day and disappear people at night. We must also say, this is not Islam. Islam is not the reason why people are clinging to planes to save their lives. That is brutalism and terrorism, and we must not let people divide ourselves here or overseas in that fight for those values.
Amazing. The Islamic extremists in the Taliban have nothing to do with Islam. Their interpretation of the Sharia as enacted is not the reason anyone's fleeing. What are they fleeing then? Is there some like crusader group for Christians in Afghanistan I've not heard of?
But I've seen often, Lord Pearson often asks questions on Islam, and the government respond, that is not true Islam. I mean, who are you as the British government to decide what a religious faith teaches or doesn't teach? That's not your role as a government. So they just repeat these words hoping it's true, but having no idea what they're talking about.
I mean, probably the worst example for me would have to be Conservative Conference when Theresa May was Home Secretary. Mm. And she stood up on a podium and decided she would quote her favourite passages from the Quran to prove that the Islamic State had nothing to do with Islam. And she says, one of the quotes she has is, let there be no compulsion in religion. Mm. And you can see in the camera, she looks down reading it and they go, yes. You can see on her face, even she doesn't believe it. But I mean, I guess we should thank Allah that, you know, it's only a Labour MP making this argument.
We should, but wasn't Tony Blair who said he had a copy of the Quran by his bed and he read it at night to give him peace or something?
Yes.
Wrong cringe. Version he was reading.
It's also just so like transparently bollocks. Like, why on earth would you try and make this argument? Yeah, I love the Quran. I'm a conservative. Whatever. Anyway, so there's that, which, she wasn't the worst one, though, from Labour. Outside, apparently there was a protest from the Stop the War coalition. That at least four Labour MPs who I recognise there turned up. I don't know who the two ladies are at the end there. But you can see Jeremy Corbyn, Richard Bergdon, Belle Enrique, or whatever her name was, I can never pronounce it, and Zara Sultana, the face of Islamo-Labour. So you can see her saying here, this morning outside Parliament, I joined colleagues to say, the war in Afghanistan shows once and for all that the West cannot deliver liberal democracy at the barrel of a gun. Worked in Japan, worked in South Korea, worked in Germany, worked in Italy. No Islamic successes yet, but I'm sure we'll have one soon.
But are they not happy the West have actually got involved and tried to remove a brutal leadership under the Taliban? Surely they should want the people in Afghanistan to be under some kind of free, democratic type of government. But they're pissed off at the West for spending trillions on trying to eradicate the Taliban.
Yeah, well, the Taliban aren't socialists, so...
Yes.
That's the problem. Because if we try and implement liberal democracy, that's imperialism. But if we implement socialism in Afghanistan, they'd have nothing to say, would they?
So I guess they're going to talk to the Taliban and that will bring liberal democracy.
Yeah. But also love how they're under the banner of the Stop the War Coalition. And you remember that the Stop the War Coalition issued a statement on Afghanistan. And their statement was that we should give reparations to the Taliban for invading Afghanistan. And also Richard Bergen tweeted that out. And they're all stood there under this banner being like, yes, this is the Labour position. Reparations to the Taliban. Oh boy. Like, this is what I mean as well, where, like, Labour MPs have no shame whatsoever. Mm. They'll do the most disgusting things and just stand by it and just be like, and what? What are you going to do about it? But Conservatives, as soon as there's a conflict, they just give up. They're just like, oh, I'm not fighting this fight. Like, I mean, go for it.
Have we not given them money? We've given them all the weapons, all the aircraft that we left there. They could sell those and make a ton of money.
Yeah, so. That's the reparations.
Yeah, yeah.
All those drones and shit we gave them. So if we go to the next one, the spiciest part of this debate, which is why I titled this Britain is Full, is from Desmond Sway, who decided to respond to Keir Starmer whining that Boris Johnson was responsible for this, as if we have any say in this, let's be honest. And he asked him, well, if a wicked and brutal regime invaded the UK, would you be queuing at the airport, Keir, or would you be fighting back? Let's play.
We cannot betray our friends. We must lead. Mr. Speaker, I will.
The government of this kingdom to be overthrown by a wicked and brutal regime. I venture that he would want a leading role in the resistance. He wouldn't be queuing at the airport, would he?
What do you think of that?
Well, it's absolutely true. You have to fight. If you actually believe in your country, believe in your country, you'll fight for it. You'll fight for what's right. You'll not just run away. But as Labour often, they run with their tails between their legs. Mm. So, yeah.
There's the other thing of him that Desmond served in the British military. Mm. I was just reading on his Wikipedia page that he got to the rank of major and he also fought in the Iraq War. So, I mean, you couldn't pick someone better to make that point where it's like, well, I fought for my country when I needed to and I'm disgraced that these people aren't as a soldier.
Mm.
What are you going to do? Criticize him for that statement? It's true. And if Keir Starmer disagrees with that, well, then you have to take the position of, yeah, I'd be a coward and just run away. I wouldn't try and defend Britain at all, which... Let's be frank. That's what he would do. It's him. Anyway.
I'm a Labour MP. Get me out of here.
Yeah. There's the response to this from Keir Starmer, which was that he'd sent Crown Prosecution Service staff to Afghanistan. And this showed that he was a tough man who would fight, I guess. Let's play.
When I was Director of Public Prosecutions, I had some of my prosecutors in Afghanistan at huge risk working on counter-terrorism with other brave souls there. So I won't take that from him or anybody else.
What? So this soldier in the army is like, I'm disgraced that these guys are fleeing instead of fighting the Taliban as a good soldier should. And Keir Starmer's response to that is, yeah, well, I've put people in harm's way, not myself.
He's sent others.
I've sent others to do it. Therefore, I'm just as noble. And also didn't answer the question of whether or not he'd fight, because we know the answer. He'd send other people to do it, I guess.
Pathetic. God. But, I mean, Keir Starmer's never been able to lead from the front, so...
Can't even lead anywhere, really.
No.
Yeah. So Desmond, being a very interesting guy, I've got a very big soft spot for, especially on the COVID stuff, but on this one, he's particularly interesting. So he went out and gave an interview to GB News about this, and he reiterated the point, why would we not fight if a wicked regime had invaded Britain, the French, let's say? We would fight back, and you should fight back, and that's the right and honourable thing to do. And if you were queuing at the airport instead of doing your duty as a soldier, you're an embarrassment. Let's play this clip.
We were overthrown by a ghastly, vicious, brutal regime. The question we would all have to ask ourselves is, do we stay and resist or do we flee? And that is something that we haven't had to confront. And I have every sympathy with people in Afghanistan who are having to make that decision. And clearly some have got to go or they'll be killed horribly. But I think that we have to have a sense that the duty of most Afghans will be to hang on in there in their country and see what they can do to save it, as we would here.
20,000 Afghan refugees to this country in the next 5 years. Is that a sensible position that the government has taken?
I think that that is reasonable, but we've been beset with demands today to, you know, vastly, hundreds of thousands have been spoken of. You know, Britain is full. The biggest issue in my post bag in the New Forest is the shortage of housing. People haven't got anywhere to live, and yet we're opening the doors to a great many more.
Love it. Like, doubles down. It's just like, no, you should fight, because I mean, would you not? And if you're the person speaking to him, are you really gonna say, no, I'd be a coward, I'd run away? But he also reiterates that, yeah, okay, we should take maybe the interpreters or people that have served us, but hundreds of thousands, as the Labour Party is proposing? Why?
Well, there were 32 million in Afghanistan, so you'll have millions that actually want to get out and don't want to live under the Taliban. But I think they're talking about 20,000 women and children, because men are not important. But then if you bring the women and children, I guess you need to bring the husbands and the fathers, so then you up that. And then multiple wives, many children. But then they're saying we'll only take teachers or health workers, as if you're a teacher, you're a higher level of worth than someone who's not a teacher. And it means you don't have any teachers or health workers in the country. It just, none of it makes sense. Either you stand, fight and protect the country and keep those people in the country and they can rebuild it, or else you just take everyone out of the country and, you know, blew it up, demolish it. I don't know.
But also they're going to bring them all to the UK. Like, not resettle them in Pakistan, you know, where they might one day return to Afghanistan if they are liberated from the Taliban, let's say, or move them to Iran or Saudi Arabia or any other our greatest allies in the region. No, they're going to take them all to Britain.
Well, they're going to get here eventually, because they're going to go through Iran and Turkey and then over here. So either we bring them quickly or else they do the slow trek, couple of, 4,000 miles into Turkey.
Well, hopefully they get lost in Turkey and then they can stay there.
Hopefully.
Did you see the Turks are building a wall? In response.
Are they?
Yeah. So on the Iranian border, like overnight, they just constructed huge barriers of concrete. Just be like, we don't want any Afghans. Interesting, isn't it? Anyway. So there's that point made by Desmond. But he also spoke about the fact that previously, as we mentioned in a previous episode, there have been an awful lot of failures, particularly with Afghan asylum seekers, that bring their culture with them and therefore end up engaging in honor killings or rapes or pedophilia, so on and so forth. The kind of things that are apparently, according to the Afghanis, culturally acceptable. And that's according to the Afghan police. We played the clip before. And, well, they brought it here. And Desmond's like, well, okay, these people failed. They were obviously liars. They weren't fleeing the Taliban because, oh my God, I'm going to be killed for being an honourable person. No, it seems like you were going to be killed for being a pedo, mate. So the response he had at the time was to write to the then president and argue, well, you need to take these people back. And the response from the president was just, no. So let's play this clip.
I am, however, unnerved by the demands that we open our borders, one member even demanding that anyone who wants to come must be enabled. You know, we have to have a sense of proportion here. Of course, I want a system of asylum to provide people who need help and support on the understanding that if the situation changes, and we hope that it must, that they would want to return. But to provide for the resettlement of anyone in a nation beset as it is, but remember, there are many nations in the world that beset and so beset and generate refugees, and I think we have to have a sense of proportion about what we're capable of. I remember being sent by the British government to negotiate with President Ghani about a more accommodating approach from him and his regime to the return of failed Afghan refugees, failed asylum seekers from the United Kingdom that we wanted to return to Afghanistan. And his answer to me was, he actually lost his rag with me and said, I'm a war president. My concern must be with the men and women who are taking the fight to the Taliban, rather than having at the top of my in tray concern about those who've chosen to flee. Now, of course, he undermines all that himself by fleeing himself.
With his money.
Yeah, he's gone to, I think, what is he, in the UAE now?
Yeah.
He made a video this morning talking about it, which, okay. So there's that, and it's a very valid point that the regime, when we tried to return, failed asylum seekers who had just turned out to be pedos or rapists or murderers, and the Afghan government wasn't interested in taking them back. I mean, that's what they're exporting, and they don't want it back. What a surprise. Anyway.
Well, I think there was a story, I remember reading a story about Syrian refugees going to Brut, one of the Outer Hebride Islands, and after a few months, they pleaded to actually go back because they didn't know what it was like. So you're right, you cannot drop someone in from a completely separate culture and expect them to just fit in and integrate.
No.
It's not going to happen.
It's also inhumane. I mean, we spend loads of money, at least when we were part of the EU, we spent loads of money going straight to Turkey, essentially, as people saw it, to bribe the Turkish to keep the migrants there. But in reality, it's you spend less money saving more lives, keeping them in a nearby country that's safe, rather than resettling them in, say, northern Sweden.
Yeah.
I mean, what a waste of time that is compared to just setting up a camp in Turkey next door. But whatever. That's that. So then there's also the verified checkmark response to all of this. So that's the stuff I found interesting. But now, one verified checkmark was more peed off that Conservatives weren't wearing masks and the Labour benches were wearing masks. Yeah, as if that's relevant today whatsoever. Good God. I mean, this is what they're concerned with. Anyway, let's move on to May. Theresa May had something to say. What did she have to say? So she had to say that we ought to have just stayed there without the Americans to secure Afghanistan, because what's the point in us having a military if we're not able to act without the Americans? So if you could scroll up on here, you can see her speech if people want to go and watch it in their own time, where she makes the point of what does it say about us as a country if we are entirely dependent on a unilateral decision taken by the United States? And the cold reality is, of course, well, with all the budget cuts to the military, if we scroll back down, we can just see the budgets for each NATO country. Yeah, that's why. Because the Americans are the overwhelming force in NATO. And if they're leaving Afghanistan, well, why would we risk a division or two of ours getting encircled by the Taliban? And if the Taliban weren't graceful, they could just kill them all. So, seems like a silly idea. But
we don't have any left. I mean, I'm an aircraft buff, and I was looking at figures the other day, and in the 80s, our main fighter jets were the Tornado, and we had about 380 of them. Now we're getting the Eurofighter, the Typhoon, and we have 150. So in 40 years, we've gone from nearly 400 fighter jets available to 150. So of course, we can barely have enough to defend ourselves, never mind going to far-flung destinations and fighting without US support. It's impossible.
Yeah, not to mention that the Americans probably got peed off that we just undermine their foreign policy as well.
But yes.
Anyway, so there was also the argument made. I couldn't find the clip. One MP argued for strategic patience that we should have just stayed in Afghanistan essentially forever. And the argument being that, well, we've done this in South Korea against the North Koreans, or we've done it in, let's say, Germany. There's still bases there. And he was like, well, it doesn't cost that much. There aren't that many troops. And I've heard this argument. It's not a terrible argument. The idea that you could stay there and just It doesn't cost us that much, but you keep the regime going. But I'm just not convinced by it. I mean, it's the 10 more years, bro. Trust me, bro. Everything will be fine.
Well, it's already been 20 years. And what, do we send troops to every country that may be a bit unstable?
Mm.
And surely that would be taking over any country. Or is it a joint work between British sovereignty and the nation mixing together? It just doesn't make sense.
Not to mention in South Korea, for example, everything's stable. Whereas Afghanistan, it never has been.
Mm.
Throughout the entire time, we haven't had control of all the territory, and the war has been going on constantly. But also, I have to wonder, why bother? I mean, as we spoke about, there are two factions, the Taliban, who are a bunch of pedos, and the regime, who are a bunch of pedos. So, as a British person, I'm just not interested. Go to hell. Whatever. Let's move on. So, turns out, the British are doing one thing, though. We apparently are sending in the paras, and the paras are escorting the UK citizens out of Afghanistan. So, if we go to the Gateway Pundit on this. The guy from the AFD sent me this. Thank you, because this is amazing. So, the US Embassy in Afghanistan, under the direction of Joe Biden on Wednesday, sent out a second security alert to stranded Americans in Kabul. The United States government cannot ensure safe passage to Hamid Karzai International Airport. So just, we can't help you. It's not happening. Joe Biden and Lloyd Austin have abandoned over 10,000 Americans trapped inside Kabul who are not able to leave their homes, the Gateway Pundit says. But not in the UK. The British government is sending paratroops in vehicles through the centre of Kabul to rescue their citizens. The UK sent paras into Kabul to help at least 4,000 stranded Brits and Afghans in the city. They were told to prepare to face combat, which I just found amazing. We do have our special forces, and apparently we are sending them in to get our people out, whereas the Americans aren't, which, strange, very strange, but whatever, let's move on. So the last thing to mention, as I mentioned, which is that I don't want to be involved in any of this, because everyone involved seems to be a nonce. So if we could just get out these images, so someone saying that I was implying that we were pedophiles, and well, there's the statement from a police commander in Afghanistan, who looked after several police bases. So it wasn't just some guy. Like, this guy, not only a police officer, but in charge of several police bases in Afghanistan. This was his statement. Not going to read that out. And then...
Is he one of the 20,000 that's going to come over here?
Oh, he worked for us.
Oh, he worked...
He helped us bring up the regime. Yeah. Fantastic. I'm glad he's getting a way out from the Taliban. Because the Taliban have the death penalty for this sort of thing.
Mm.
Keep in mind. If you're doing it with boys. If you're doing it for girls, they don't care because it's the Taliban. Yeah.
Perfect. Bring on the death penalty.
Let's go to the next one here, just to make this point even more stark. We read this story, the US soldier who said that they spoke about this to officials and then were told to ignore it. Then we go to the next one. There's just the quote and to prove the point. And then the last one here. We get the last image. Just the description from Wikipedia. There's a thing. This place is hell on earth. And I want nothing to do with it. I can't reiterate this point harder, that I'm not really sure that we should be trying to accept these sort of people into the UK. And I just wanted to end this segment by saying that I got a message from some guy who said he's a British soldier, and he remembers having to go through this as well, that seeing this sort of stuff and being told by the British government shouldn't interfere. It's their culture.
Mm.
And I just wanted to say, if you know someone who served in Afghanistan or his family member served in Afghanistan, I recommend probably giving them a call just to go out for a pint or something. I can't imagine it's a great feeling right now knowing that you've lost friends out there or legs or anything else for a Taliban victory. Yeah, we'll end that there. Should we move on to your section?
Yeah.
So I suppose I should introduce you first.
Go for it.
Sure. So for people who don't know, Peter McAvena has taken time out of his day to come and join us. He's the co-founder of Hearts of Oak. So if we can get this up, this is the organization here. You can go to if you go to heartsofoak.org/livestream, you'll get all the live streams Hearts of Oak does. And you'll be having, as you said, the godfather of the counter-jihad movement, David Horowitz, on tomorrow.
Yes, so we do two live streams. We do Monday and Thursday, and then on Saturday night is a news review of the week. And had an interview with David Horowitz yesterday, which goes out today. David Horowitz runs the David Horowitz Freedom Center, Jihad Watch, Front Page Magazine, and his latest book is this, The Enemy Within, How a Totalitarian Movement is Destroying America. Fantastic read. He is a prolific book writer, but he has been called the godfather of the anti-Islam movement. Actually, it's the counter-jihad movement, but he is a phenomenal individual. He's 82, and his work, he's come from a hard for Marxist regime, probably from the 50s, 60s, 70s. He grew up a communist and then saw the light and came over to the right. So now opposes Marxism and fights for freedom and opposes the clash that we have with Islam and the freedoms in the West. So fantastic individual. And yeah, that's tonight on Hearts of Oak.
/livestream.
Or on any of the other platforms that we have. So yes.
Yeah. So you came here today to talk about a petition you're setting up.
Yes.
We've had some success with these in the past. Remember, we did. We worked together with the petition to get the report published on grooming gangs.
Yes, it was the Home Office had. We're going to put together a report to look at the characteristics of grooming gang offenders, and then they didn't do it, and then they said it wouldn't be public, and we had a petition which was just after launch, so back March last year, and there was a debate in the House, and it forced the government to release it. So actually they can do something positive. Often you get a kind of copy and paste response, but it is possible to change government views, and that report came out and exposed lots of failings, so it is possible. But this latest one is entitled Stop Grooming Gang Members Accessing Public Funds to Fight Their Convictions. And we'll go in the story, but grooming gang members who have been charged, convicted, sentenced for raping children or other sexual offences are currently able to access public funds to fight their convictions or any deportation efforts. And we're calling the government to remove their access to public funds so they can no longer fight those convictions, and certainly so they can't fight any effort to deport them if they're dual nationality, which some of these are, having Pakistani and British nationality. So I'd encourage the viewers to go and sign that, send it on. And we want to have a response from the government and a debate. I'm sure the government will say everyone should have access. I think if you rape children that you remove or lose some of your rights in society.
If you're a foreign national especially.
Absolutely foreign national. And these people should have been on a plane immediately. But this has gone on, these individuals, for 9 years. 2012 they went to jail. So it's gone on long enough. But there's a huge issue with the government's failure and seemingly inability legally to actually do stuff. That's where we come in. And all this has happened under a Conservative government. I really enjoy kicking Labour and pointing the finger at them. But this is the Tories. They've been in power since 2010. It's their fault that this is happening. It's on their watch, and they could change the system so that these individuals are sent immediately. But the legal system just tangles it up, slows everything down, and in the meantime, these individuals get money. So if the one of the stories that, if we move on, the headline is Rochdale Child Grooming, Anger as Gang Member Spotted in Town. This was April this year. This is a regular story that comes up every 3-4 months, and they look at different cases. This is the Rochdale Nine men convicted for conspiracy to rape or for raping young girls, and they went to jail, but they then got out and they've been free to walk around, and probably every 3-4 months a story comes up about them bumping into one of their victims in the town.
Yeah, I remember one of it was where they bumped into Asda.
Yeah, and MPs came out and said, this is a disgrace, we need to do something about it, and of course what happens? Absolutely zero. I mean, these men are not tagged. There are no restrictions. I don't know if they can actually look after children. I don't know if they have their own kids. I mean, it's crazy the freedom they have. And are they changed? Well, I would argue that I don't know if they can change. If that's their lifestyle and that's what they enjoy or want, then actually can you prove and that they've really changed and don't have those urges any longer. So this was one of the stories that I think Lord Pearson had read, and we had discussed it in the office. And he said, I wonder, do they have access to government money? I wonder, do they have access to taxpayers' money to fight their convictions? So let's go to the parliamentary question. Lord Pearson's parliamentary question, which he put down on the 19th of May, so just the next month after this story. And here he asked the government, how much money has been spent in legal aid for members of the Rochdale grooming gang, the nine of them? And what is their estimate of the amount of money spent assisting the victims of that gang? Now, probably our viewers will think the government will say lots of money have gone to the victims. Actually, why would the rapists get money? Well, here we have a breakdown, and I've never seen such a breakdown like this before. The nine of them got 1.85 million, just short of 2 million quid for nine. Now, there are a whole lot of questions. How many other grooming gang members, there are 420 sentenced and jailed, how many of those 420 have got public money? Is this into the hundreds of millions? Is it higher? So you get a breakdown. There's the second one. Adil Khan got 200,000 for a solicitor in the Crown Court. Abdul Raif got 207,000. These are large amounts of money. It's not just 10,000, 15,000. These are huge amounts of money, 1.85 million. And this just seemed to be brushed under the carpet. It was kind of picked up in one or two places, but not much. And actually, one of the other interesting parts of this is the Lord Pearson asked about victims, survivors, how much the survivors of the Rochdale grooming gang have received. And if you scroll down on that, you find, yeah, we do not collect data on the cost of supporting individual victims.
So like,
hell,
zero.
You don't. That's zero. So they keep data on all the millions going to the rapists, but they claim to not have any data on the victims. So they're giving millions to the rapists. They don't get this money in their pocket. It's for legal aid to fight the cases. And the victims, actually, they don't get any money automatically. They don't get legal aid for the victims. So that's the current situation in the UK, the huge gulf between the taxpayers' money going to these individuals who rape children and the girls themselves getting seemingly zero, because if the government were given specific money, they would say. Now, they talk about 151 million for victim support. That's, we're not asking for, we're asking specifically for the Rochdale grooming gang, how much money have the girls that have been part of that, how much have they got? And it seems as though it's zero. Mm. So that's where we are at the moment.
If they knew what it was, they'd say.
They would.
Well, if it was a high number, they'd say.
Yeah.
Because they'd be like, haha, look, we give loads of money to the girls.
Yep.
We're not doing anything wrong.
Yep.
I just can't get over how you spend 200 grand. Like, if we could scroll back up, some of those statistics, especially, like the 200 grand for a solicitor and then 67 grand for a barrister in Crown Court. I don't know why he gets both. But also just the small ones there as well, like 200 quid in the police station for advice. What the hell does that even mean?
I don't know why I had to pay 200 quid to get some advice.
But also, they're all different sums as well.
Yeah. And the last two didn't get any advice. They are huge amounts of money, and the government doesn't seem to be embarrassed at this. But this is, and it's the legal system. It's the government taking taxpayers' money to put money in the legal system, which is all to do with making money. It's a racketeering system. It's not about justice. If it was about justice, these men would be on a plane as soon as they were released from jail. It's about putting money into the pockets of those in the legal system, and it's just a merry-go-round. So that's what it's about. So the next story is, what is happening to these men? So there are three of them, I believe, that had dual nationality. They were stripped of their British citizenship, and then they were going to be sent over to Pakistan because obviously they fit into Pakistan. And now they're using, so this is two of them, they're invoking Article 8 of the European Convention of Human Rights, the human rights to family life. Again, no issue of the human rights of the girls who get raped. They don't get any financial help or any governmental help. But actually, these rapists, they have a right to family life. Again, I think you lose some rights whenever you participate in such heinous crimes.
But what an obvious lie as well, like the families can't just get on a plane to Pakistan and come see you.
Well, yes, I remember looking through all the flights that went to Pakistan, and the government claimed that they deport whenever it is safe and legal to do so. They'll argue because of COVID, it's maybe not safe to do it. Mm. These men started getting out of prison in 2015. They could have started sending them immediately on a plane. And we can drive them. We can hire a car. We'll drive them to Pakistan and dump them there. Just get rid of them. So these individuals, they lost. They then took the government to court. And that's all the money involved, the 2 million. They took the government to court against their deportation in 2015, I think it was, 2016. They lost that in 2018. So that was 2018, but it took the government 2 years to issue deportation letters to them. So they lost. And it wasn't, as soon as they lost, the government immediately issued deportation papers. The government took 2 years to get round to sending them papers. And now they're using the Equality Act to fight that. There's a fantastic, frightening line, horrendous line, near the bottom. I'll read it to you because I don't see it. The line is that last month Khan told a preliminary hearing, "We have not committed that big a crime." So these men actually believe that it's not a big issue. We just raped some girls. Well, what's the problem? And it goes back to your issue about culture and possibly about religion, but that's a whole other discussion, that these people like this, how can you integrate them in society if they think that raping girls is normal? And I guess they're part of a culture that doesn't have any engagement with women. Women are hidden away and they don't have, they don't bump into women, they don't talk to women. So they will basically say, well, they couldn't control their urges because they don't understand how these things work.
Yeah, I mean, there was one scumbag in one of these cases, not this one, but another one, where he tried to defend himself in court by saying he had a sexual emergency and that was his defense for raping a child.
So bad. Just like,
no, these people are unbelievably uncivilized.
Yeah, yeah. Another part of this is that the short sentences, another issue that really hasn't come out a lot. So here, one of them, Ralph, was jailed for 6 years. I think it was conspiracy to rape. And he was jailed for 6 years. He was released in November 2014 after serving 2 years and 6 months. So he goes to jail for 6 years. He gets out after what? Good behavior? Because he doesn't rape anyone in jail? Is that what it is? He doesn't even serve half of his sentence and he's left out, seemingly with no restrictions. And he can live. Surely he should be told you need to live in a separate part of the country. You can't live anywhere near that you may see the victims. But he can go right back to the place of his crimes and
where the victim lives and run into them.
Yeah. Hmm. Why should the victim be forced to leave where they live? And yet they drop them back right in the middle. And this story goes into what happened. And it's, I've read enough of these stories. It is gruesome, is horrendous. And often you find communities, they close up and they don't want to give out these men, that they're not rushing to the police because they deal with these things internally, which means that they don't. And often it's the woman who is at fault because she's had sex with a man. And it's her fault. It's not the man's fault. Never the man's fault. Never. There are two other areas of this. One is the next story. Child rape gang whistleblower. Child sex abuse is going on everywhere. This is from Breitbart. And this is Maggie Oliver came out with this statement. This is 29th of July, so just weeks ago. And Maggie Oliver was a former detective constable in the Greater Manchester Police and thinks she left in 2012 because she was horrified at this issue not being explored, not being opened and not being tackled. So she left the police and became a whistleblower and talked about this is what's happening in the Greater Manchester Police. The two worst have been South Yorkshire Police and Greater Manchester Police for cover-ups. And in this, she talks about she basically is on this story because there was a report out and the independent report from Bradford said that the children had suffered abuse no child should have to experience. The local government were very sorry and they would do all they could to make sure it didn't happen again. This all was exposed in 2012 by Andrew Norfolk in the front of the Times. So this has been going on 9 years. It was first exposed by Anne Cryer, a Labour MP up in Keighley, 20 years ago. And she was called racist. She was called Islamophobic, everything for exposing this. And she's saying, I'm just pointing out what's happening. So it was a Labour MP that exposed it. Another Labour MP, Sarah Champion, does a lot of work on highlighting this. She lost her job on the Labour front bench because she had an article in The Sun.
Neither of them very popular with the Labour Party at total, though.
No, no, not at all, no. So that is that. And then the final part of this, I mean, there's so many parts of this, and often you can get very angry at the individuals who've carried it out. But for me, actually, can we do something good? And can we, one, stop them getting money, but can we help the girls who actually have been part of this? So the final story was from the Metro, and it was about victims not getting compensation. Now, this is a little bit separate. This is not legal aid. This is a system that gives individuals compensation if they've been a victim of a crime. And there's a whole list of what money is available to certain crimes. And this headline, it's not right to deny victims compensation just because they have a criminal record. This was in July. It was an organization called Unlock that looks after victims of crime. And if you scroll down on this, let me touch on this. It starts off just by talking about someone, James, who was stabbed in a terrorist attack. He went to get compensation through the system, which is the Criminal Injuries Compensation Authority, which administers this compensation scheme. And he was told he couldn't get it because he had a criminal conviction. Now, the problem is, especially in grooming gangs, that these girls have been pulled into a life of petty crime.
Yeah. I remember there was an incident where a girl had been arrested for drunk and disorderly conduct after the police arrived and saw that basically she was being abused by a gang. Yeah. They arrest the girl and not the gang members.
Yeah.
So I imagine she'd be one of the people that would then have a conviction.
Well, exactly. And we've had fathers being arrested because they've gone to the police to complain about what's been happening. There is a horrendous part of this, which is the worst case they talk about, was a woman who was repeatedly raped by two men when she was 13, being refused a payout because she had been prosecuted for driving without insurance and refusing to take a sample test. So her crime is quite small in relation to what's happening, but because of that small thing on a record, she doesn't get access to this compensation. And if we scroll up, there's a one in the middle of this. Yes, so there. So their word is highlighted a little bit in orange. In fact, from 2016 to 2019, 3,500 casualties of violent crime, including 420 cases of rape and other sexual violence, were refused compensation due to their criminal record. And as you say, often these girls, they get plied with alcohol, with drugs, they get involved in petty crime. They're told they have to get involved in petty crime to pay for the alcohol and the drugs they've received. And so they're on the police radar. And as you said, the police are very quick often to punish these girls instead of going after the men. So it's a very complicated issue. And as Maggie Oliver said, it is still happening up and down the country today. It's not just past cases that are being prosecuted, but it is still happening. And we're hoping through this petition to try and cut off the avenue to access legal aid to these individuals. And then separately, we can look at how you actually channel money and compensation to the girls so they can begin to rebuild their lives, because they don't automatically get it. So it is a horrendous issue. The stories are awful. I've just read Jane Senior's book, who ran a organization called Risky Business that helped young girls who got caught up in this. And she has written a book about her experience in helping these girls and how they were failed by the police, how they were failed by social services, how they were failed by the council. And often the parents would go to police and desperate, and the police would say, these girls have chosen that lifestyle. They've chosen to be promiscuous. They've chosen to go out and
child sleep. Prostitutes.
Yeah.
As if there is such a thing. Mm. No, there's a sex slave is what that is.
Yeah. You cannot make a choice if you're underage. So it is the adult who is at fault, and yet they went after the children. So it's a massive area, and I would really encourage the viewers to go and click on that e-petition, put your name to it. And as we saw last year, it is possible to change government response, government opinion, government policy, and we're hoping to do the same on this.
Yeah. I wonder, could we get John or Vicky, if you could put it in the chat as well, because I'd like to set up, but otherwise thank you.
Depressing.
I mean, I don't like covering the grooming gangs, not because I'm sick of talking about it in the sense, but it's depressing every single time. But as you say, it still goes on. Nothing's changed. Like, it didn't stop when they banned British Voldemort from social media. Like, it wasn't just suddenly and then there's no more rapists. No, it just keeps going. Anyway, I suppose we should lighten the mood a little bit, so
yes,
hopefully the segment's a little bit more fun. So this is a segment I'm just going to tell you, like, what is the West learned from Afghanistan? Because I don't really know what to call it. It's just a bunch of stuff that's happened. I thought we'd start with a nice meme. So just Far Cry 7 meme. I look forward to it, which you can play as Miles and go on his adventures throughout Kabul. I'm sure you know about Miles, the British nut job he went up there, which It's just really funny. Like, I can't hate him. It's just too funny a story. Anyway, but the situation in Afghanistan has got worse. So the airport, which the Americans are meant to be holding, apparently is falling to crap. So on multiple times now, we've seen footage of gunshots going off. This is probably the worst one, which was yesterday, which you can see guys with guns having to fire back at God knows what whilst they're being shot at. Apparently 12 people were killed in this exchange here.
Wow.
So we're not sure if the Taliban did it or if it's a false flag from the Afghan National Army or something trying to make a situation. But the situation there is what it is, which is absolute hell. So if we go to the next one, there's some more footage of just the airport. You see there's still loads of people. And all these people, presumably, fleeing from the Taliban and wanting to get out of here because they know that, I don't know, they're all homosexual or something, perhaps, which I'm sure is taking place. If we get the satellite photos in the next one up as well, just to show the extent of this. So this were satellite photos. I believe these were taken before the planes had taken off and people fell off them. And you can see just people who look like ants. We can click on those photos just to get them up. Like the sheer numbers. If we go to the last one here, you can see the people like right next to the runway, all over the runway, with the Americans sitting around not really knowing what to do because it's a hell of a situation to be in. But yeah, we were told by the Americans that apparently the Americans don't have the capacity to get people out anymore. So this is a statement from the Biden administration. We don't have the capability to go out and collect large numbers of people. They've only got the capacity to get small numbers of people, they're saying then. Which presumably means that they've effectively lost control of the airport with the huge amounts of people or unable to keep the security around it. So that's that situation. So if we go to the next one, we can have Milley. Remember Milley? General Milley?
Oh, yes.
The guy who was so adamant about reading about white rage.
Yeah.
Because he needs to understand what happened at the Capitol. As if that has anything to do with it, but whatever. He said, there was nothing that I or anyone else saw that indicated a collapse of the Afghan army and this government in 11 days. Wow. Which there have been public reports from intelligence agencies saying it would last 90 days at least. But then we have whistleblowers who keep messaging Jack Posobiec, for example, saying this is nonsense. You know, we've been given report after report of them defecting thousands at a time. So I'm not sure I trust him on this. I also don't trust the American government, to be honest, in the slightest with any of this, because it's a big defeat for them.
Maybe the Taliban should train up US soldiers instead. Might be the better way around, because they seem to be better at doing this. That after 2 decades, they push back in 10 days.
Yeah, maybe they spend less time reading about white rage instead of learning about how to use the guns. So,
checking to see how diverse they are, yeah.
Yeah, there has been a statement from a Pakistani journalist that I found particularly interesting, though, because we got those scenes from Kabul, but we're not seeing anywhere else in the country this kind of situation. So if we go to this one. So Taliban takeover did not generate the number of refugees that was expected. No refugee crisis right now on the border, says a Pakistan-based journalist. Now, it's hard to trust because Pakistan-based journalist, therefore, is he just a spokesman for the Taliban?
Yeah.
But I do have to wonder, because we're seeing this in Kabul at the airport. That's true. And we're not having any news about anywhere else. Like, why are people not fleeing from the countryside endlessly into northern Pakistan or into Tajikistan or wherever else, right?
It's true, because they're not going to get away on an airplane. The Americans aren't going to say, don't worry, jump on. We'll fly you wherever you'd like to go.
Just hold on. Yeah.
Show me your ticket. Where do you want to go? So, yeah, and we haven't seen a lot of pictures from the borders. So...
Yeah. Maybe it's true. I don't know. I just had to include it because if there's more information, please let us know. But someone has done an interview with some of the boys who got on the plane, you know, on the side of it, who then fell off because there's not how planes work.
Yeah.
So we get this story. This is titled Family of Boy Who Fell from Military Aircraft Leaving Kabul Explain Why He Left. And the question is like, well, like everyone else there, the hordes of people, presumably they're all fleeing the Taliban because they've all got reasons to be fearful of the Taliban murdering them.
Yes.
A family told Vice World News that they believe the person seen falling from the C-17 in the viral footage was their 17-year-old son. Their other son, who is just 16, is also missing. A relative said, quote, "We are really upset that we've lost two. We found the body of one of them, but the other one is still missing. Everyone is trying to run away. It is the fear of the Taliban. They are killing people. They have all left to go to the airport. They want to go abroad." Okay, so there's the narrative you would expect, that this man was fleeing the Taliban and he's so scared of the Taliban he jumped on a plane and then fell off it. But the rest of this interview makes me wonder. The relative explained how the teenager heard a rumor that Canada and the United States would be accepting 20,000 refugees. Which they were, remember. They ended up issuing a statement saying, yes, we're going to take 20,000 in just Canada. along with the 20,000 we're taking, and the 20,000 the Americans are taking, presumably, probably more, being the Americans. The 17-year-old leapt at a chance of being one of the first people to be admitted under the rumor scheme, and, quote, without telling anyone in the house, he took his personal ID and left to the airport.
Because this is how you get to another country. You jump on the side of a plane, you hold on as it passes continents, and then you just jump off again.
But also, he didn't tell anyone in the family.
Mm.
He just got his ID and left.
Why would he not bring everyone from his family? Bring the whole family.
Surely the whole family are going to be at risk if you're at risk.
Yeah.
No, the mum, they mention, is like crying about this and whatnot, as, you know, as she would be if she's lost two of her sons. But the fact that she didn't go with them, there was no attempt to take the family.
Mm.
It was just these two teenage boys were like, we're just going to go to the airport and get there. Why? Because we had a rumour that the Canadians are accepting 20,000 refugees. I got to be honest, sounds kind of fishy to me. I mean, it sounds like they weren't really fleeing the Taliban, because then they'd give a reason, right? Mm. Oh, he worked as an interpreter. Oh, he worked as, you know, supporting the American government or something, right?
Yeah.
No, instead they say that they heard a rumor about refugees, and therefore they were just like, well, I want to go to the West, and just hopped on over to the airport, and then ended up dying.
And at 17, he can't even say he's a doctor or a school teacher, which bars him getting in, so...
Well, I don't know out there. Maybe they start younger. I believe, like, the median age in Afghanistan is 18. Because everyone just dies so young because of the situation. Also the high birth rate and all the rest of it.
Mm.
So that's also a thing that most people who are alive don't even remember the days before the Taliban. No. Mm. Interesting. So I'm not convinced the idea that these guys are definitely all fleeing the Taliban. And that also brings up the question of how are we screening these people? I mean, not just to screen them to make sure if they're a nonce or not, or if they're just Taliban, but are you actually fleeing anything? Or are you just wanting to come to the West? How are we determining these things? Well, I suppose the way we're determining these things is declaring the Taliban an ally. They're no longer an enemy. So this is probably the worst one of the brass interviews that we've seen coming out of all of this. So this is on Sky News. The chief of defense staff from Britain decided to go on and say that we shouldn't call the Taliban an enemy, even though up until like 2 days ago we were trying to kill them all. But okay. So let's play this clip.
I think you have to be very careful using the word enemy. I think people need to understand who the Taliban actually are. And, of course, what they are a disparate collection of tribespeople. As President Karzai put it to me only yesterday, they're country boys. And the plain fact is that they happen to live by a code of honour and a standard, which has been their standard for many, many years. It's called Pashtun Wali. It has honour at the heart of what they do. They are bound together by a common purpose, which is they don't like corrupt governance. They don't like governance that is self-serving. And they want an Afghanistan that is inclusive for all. So I think rather than talking
except
about...
Except women.
What?
Except women.
Well, again, I think we have to wait and see. I mean, I don't know what they mean.
We can't support the way that they treat women. We surely.
Well, I think you have to listen to what they're saying at the moment. And I think you have to listen to the facts on the ground.
I'm saying they are definitely, have to abide by Sharia law.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's anything that you and I would approve of particularly.
I'm just clarifying that.
Absolutely. But I do think that they have changed. I think they recognise that over the course of the last 20 years, Afghanistan has evolved. They recognise the fundamental role that women have played in that evolution. And yes, they at the moment will undoubtedly say that they want to respect women's rights under Islamic law, and that will be a Sharia law. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they won't allow them to be involved in government and in education and in medicine and those things that they need them to be involved in. So I think we have to be patient. We have to give them the space to show how they are going to step up to the plate.
I mean, I know there's a lot of opium being grown in Afghanistan. I didn't think you were meant to take it back with you and enjoy it whilst you're in the UK, but I don't know how else you come to a statement like that. Like him talking about, the Taliban, they're just country boys, you know, they're from the flyover states, they're just good lads, they have a code of honour, they're very anti-corruption. I mean, this glowing endorsement of the Taliban as good boys, they didn't do nothing. And I love how Kate Burley's only response to that was, yeah, but what about women? Like the rest of it, it's just like, yeah, the Taliban are good boys, they didn't do nothing. Country boys summer, as John is saying. No, she didn't interrupt that, but she's like, yeah, but what about women's rights? And he's like, no, well, they'll respect women's rights under Sharia.
Maybe she just wasn't expecting so much crap to come out.
That makes no sense, the only defense.
But country boys, I mean, you could have teachers, you could have health workers and country boys, so you could have that as another category.
The doctors.
For refugees.
Country boys.
don't know how you clarify that or classify it.
Oh, but, boy. But also women's rights under Sharia.
But has he not seen what the Taliban have done with the Americans, with the Russians before? has he no idea of history that actually they may come good. They may be a good ally for us.
Our greatest ally in the region. Oh boy. But yeah, that's the chief of defense staff for the UK, which you have to be very careful calling them an enemy. They're our greatest friends now. Also the idea that they're forming an inclusive government. I mean, it's the stuff of memes, isn't it?
I mean, there is fairly, it kind of explains the situation we're in the UK whenever we've got people in leadership who think, actually, women will be fine. Might be a woman PM next to Afghanistan. Who knows what they'll do?
It's her turn. Anyway, so some Americans might be wondering, maybe because he's doing a public interview, has to be diplomatic or something. No, he's not a politician. He's not a diplomat. Mm. He's just the chief of staff for defense. He has no reason to be diplomatic. That is his honest views, presumably, as he gives them.
But if he says it's fine, actually, you don't need to take anyone in. What's the point in having any refugees if it's going to be a good country that's going to look after women and the country boys will just make it all good? Then stay there.
You know, I might as well just rename, like, stop calling them the Taliban and just call them the country boys. They should rebrand. Just try. You know what? You know, they've all got Twitter accounts. They should do that thing where you'd be like, yes, I am Mahmoud, quote, the country boys, Mohammed.
That's like a boys band.
Oh, the country boys coming to a region near you. Actually, yes, because we're taking 20,000 of them. But anyway. Yes. So what's the Western response to all this, apart from Britain, who's decided that they're the country boys? We have Biden, who's decided that he needs his blanket and is going home. It's just so depressing. Like, I know, you know, I'm not pro-Democrat, I'm not pro-Biden, but I must admit, it is just goddamn embarrassing. Like, if I was a Democrat, this would be a rough time to be a Democrat. Anyway, if we get this first tweet up from Jack Posobiec, and you can see the timestamp, 1:25 p.m., he tweeted out, Biden telling staff he wants to go back to Delaware. Hasn't been sleeping well this week. Thinks he will be more functional if he stays over at home in Wilmington. I need my bed back.
I want to go back home. I don't like this.
He's currently on holiday at Camp David for days. I mean, remember his press conference. He immediately just left and went back on holiday. So that's not good enough. He needs to go home and get his blanket from home. Okay. And this might just be a rumor. Remember Jack Posobiec? Could be fake news. Right winger. No. If we go to the next one here, we have 2:17 p.m. President Biden, who has spent the last few days traveling between the White House and Camp David, is scheduled to head to Delaware for a long weekend. That's according to the FAA's website. So he really is going home for a nice blanket and a nice sleep.
So this is the biggest failure of US foreign policy for decades, and he's a bit sleepy.
Yeah, he's tired. He's got to go home.
Take a caffeine and just man up.
Whilst the Taliban do their press conference and take plenty of questions. No questions. Keep it coming. Press freedom, open government. That's what the Taliban's all about. But Joe Biden, not so much. That's the message being given off. So if we go to the next one, the Taliban are also just mocking him. So this is Chinese state-affiliated media, Global Times, tweeting out, after playing bumper cars, the Taliban was seen having ice creams in Kabul on Thursday, which some netizens said reminded them of US President Joe Biden, who also liked ice cream. the country boys. Oh, boy. I also wanted to include in this, there's been some rumors about Kamala Harris, because, I mean, what's she been up to? The soon-to-be president of the United States.
Yes.
Apparently, not much. She's trying to stay out of this. So this is the rumors from inside. You will not pin this S on me. Kamala Harris chose to hide as Afghanistan collapsed. And it says, a source reportedly told Kyle Becker at Becker News that Harris refused to be part of the addressing the American people on Sunday. She didn't want to be part of that press conference. I love how they also use Jack Posobiec to confirm this, which is just wonderful. Like, Jack is just so much of a truth teller at this point.
He really is.
Everything is just like, yeah, this is going to happen, and it does. I was like, well, okay. So, Poso confirmed. Kamala refused a request to do a presser today, said she was focused on Haiti, not Afghanistan, because nothing to do with me, Gov. I'm out of here. This is all your problem.
But I read that she basically hadn't been seen for 6 days, that she's just disappeared. And yeah, she's been called to do these things. And it's great to see you've got elections next year, midterms next year. So just a year away. So I just hope this runs and runs and really just destroys the Democrats' chance of getting anywhere in the midterms. And hopefully it'll just be a huge wedge between the former vice president and the president-elect.
I hope so too. I mean, if there's any silver lining out of this, suppose it's us being out of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And also the fall of Democrats, which would also be nice. So there's a certain thing that's still going on, which is strange. So remember Facebook banned the Taliban? Apparently YouTuber followed suit. And now Twitter is the only one with them on. So everyone's, you know, like Alex Jones, where they banned him from everything except Twitter, and everyone started looking at Twitter. Same thing's happening with the Taliban. And everyone's looking at Jack now. Well, the Taliban are still there, and Twitter's defending themselves. They're not taking this. They'll ban Donald Trump, but not the Taliban. Twitter is the only significant social media platform not to have banned the Taliban, with senior members in the organization boasting more than 1 million followers between them. Big organization, and growing. They've gained 300,000 new followers in a couple of days. So they're
popular.
They're going to get verified checkmarks soon. Unlike Facebook and YouTube, Twitter said it would not bar the Taliban members unless they were found to be glorifying or promoting violence or expressing hatred against a person or group.
Have they missed what's been happening? Completely missed the last 20 years.
Also, I love that. I guess this means that you can kill anyone you want and you won't be banned from Twitter. But if you do it on Twitter, then you'll be banned from Twitter.
Yes.
Except that also doesn't make sense because, of course, Donald Trump. He never glorified the Capitol situation at all. The people walking between the ropes. And yet the Pakistani, sorry, the Freudian slip, the Afghani Taliban, however, were glorifying their victory in which they stormed the capital, Kabul, and just became the government. And we're just like, yeah, me and the boys, we run the place now. Country boy summer.
But yeah, but they're not, we were told earlier, they're not the enemy, so it's fine.
Mm. But also there's the question of Facebook and YouTube now, which is, if they're happy to ban the official government of Afghanistan, why not the official government of Pakistan or Iran? Or we can keep going, can't we?
Mm.
Could go on forever. But there is some good news about the Taliban being on Twitter. Good memes. Some real good memes. So this is a lovely story. Twitter frog account successfully negotiates with Taliban to secure the safety of Spanish diplomats after the government falls. So a frog avatar account, a Pepe Spaniard, has decided to message the Taliban and they're like, hey bro, don't harm Spain. We hate America too. So they say here, the Spanish government had seemingly failed to establish a clear and open line of communication with the Taliban, inspiring the owner of a frog avatar account to take action. I hope they stay on Twitter forever. So the Taliban guy, so the tweet here, you can see the Taliban guy tweets out in his language that Nashagar's sweet district was completely conquered. Again, no glorification of violence here. And then the Spanish Pepe responds, hello brother, please don't hurt the Spanish people at the embassy. We are forces in your country by America. We don't like them either. And the Taliban responds, we are human beings. We respect each other. We don't say anything to foreign troops.
What? So they're engaging with this random bloke.
Yeah, they're just engaging with the Pepes, the 4chan guys who have made troll accounts. They're like, yeah, don't worry, bro, we got you. Hello, friend. Can you save our Spanish diplomats? Don't worry, friend. I'm a friend too.
I'm on it.
So this has inspired more Pepe posting as well, because as soon as he responded to one, everyone was like, right, I'm getting in on this. So we go to the next one. There's another Pepe account who's talking to him. So we scroll up on this, you can see the conversation. So he has this post of people falling from the planes, Yeah, and he says here, we thought that today some people lost their lives in search of life because they relied on America without Allah. Again, no glorification of violence whatsoever. Mm-hmm. We promise you that you will not suffer any personal or financial loss. Please do not embarrass us. We are your servants. So the Taliban trying to reach out to the Afghanis on Twitter there. And the Pepe account responds with, as you promised, my friend, please need you for fully treat and take care of Spaniards who remain in your country. And the Taliban responded with, okay, okay. And the Pepe responded with, thank you, friend.
What the hell?
Hello, friend. Please take care of the Spaniards. Don't worry, friend. I will. Oh, thank you, friend.
And this is real?
This is real. The Taliban are communicating with 4chaners all day, which is just it's amazing. So we go to the next one. There's more of these as well. Like, there are loads and loads of these. This one is a guy, like, pleading for Miles' safety. You know, the English guy?
Yeah.
So you see he writes here, dear friend of the Taliban, please be very careful with this drunken English foreigner. He can jeopardize the reconstruction plan. And then if you scroll down, you can see the response from the Taliban that is, inshallah, thanks, dear.
Thanks, dear.
Oh, my God. I don't know what to say. If you know anyone who's trapped in Afghanistan or Kabul, don't contact the embassy. They've all left. Make a Pepe account and message this dude, and he'll guarantee your safety and make sure you can get out. Thanks, dear.
Thanks, dear. Like, calm down, dear.
We'll take care of that drunken English foreigner. Such a cute guy.
Sure. We'll deal with him later.
But that's the thing. They have actually guaranteed foreigners a safe passage out, wow. Which is amazing. Like Miles, for example, he got a Taliban escort to the airport. Him and a bunch of foreigners from the UN, they got escorted by the Taliban. So maybe, I don't know, maybe he did see the post and was like, don't worry, bro, we've sent guys to get him. And they escorted him out and he got a plane and is now back home. I think he's in a hotel in Britain having a night. Anyway, so I wanted to end this section on probably just another sermon of Pakistan Delenta Est, because why not? So I thought I'd take this quote. Taliban doing rape of 15-year-old girls and some people in a particular community are celebrating the victory of the Taliban. This guy is apparently a leader for BJP Youth, so particular communities, have it a guess. I'm going to have it a guess at the Pakistani PM personally, specifically. So if we go to the next one, we spoke about this before, you can see David posting about this, which is that Imran Khan's response to the Taliban victory was that the Taliban had freed Afghanistan from slavery of the disgusting Westerners who had invaded because they were being subjugated by Western culture. Because to be subjugated by a foreign culture is akin to slavery. So if there are any British people being subjugated to Pakistani culture, they are slaves of Pakistan and are justified in rising up, so says the Pakistani PM. I thought I'd just end this section on just an image of Imran Khan's wedding photo, which I didn't know about, and now I do. Look at that. So it's a picture for people listening of him and all the male family members and some women in the background there standing there, and then his wife, who looks like the Ood out of Doctor Who or something, with some red like shawl covering her entire face for the photo. I mean, it looks like he's marrying a carpet or something. There is no person there. I mean, maybe you can see her hands. I'm not sure. Is she wearing gloves? A good Muslim covering up her hands as well. But yeah.
Why do the others not get that? Is she the only hot one?
She...
I don't know.
My wife's too hot to be seen.
It's true.
Maybe it's Mohammed. Anyway, on that bombshell, it's time to end the show. Let's go to the video comments.
I've got the date for when I go off to the army. 9th of January. But in the meantime, if you're still single, even though it's been a month, what are you going to do about it? Hmm? Stop being lazy. Get on it.
That's the civic nationalist there. Did I hear him right? He say he's joining the army? Is that correct? All right, well... Yeah, good for him, I guess. I mean, definitely try and sort out some of the nonsense as well, if he can. People start lecturing about all the preferred pronouns, and you'd be like, no, no, no. This is how we lost Afghanistan. So let's try being soldiers. What to do about finding women? Well, don't know. I'm useless. Let's go to the next one.
So you're giving the Canadian government a little too much credit. Back in May of 2020, they created a list of military-style weapons that they wanted to prohibit from ownership, possession, or transition. And in that list, on page 7, they included the AR-15.com. They listed a website because they used a search engine to determine what was actually a banned firearm in Canada, a military-style weapon.
So they decided to ban guns, and they were like, let's just have a search engine look up all the guns. And they were like, yeah, the AR-15.com rifle. That's banned. You can't own an AR-15.com anymore. That's fantastic. Thanks for telling me that. That's an amazing story.
Now, by happy coincidence, I'm really kicking back to London at the end of the month and have booked tickets for the Friday and Saturday night Lotus Eaters events. This means I'm going to be free on this Saturday in London and we'll be hosting some form of cigar event. If you'd like to join me, if you go along to the Sultans of Chatelet Discord, you'll find an area there where we'll be discussing it. Okay.
All right, perfect. I look forward to seeing him again. I remember the first time I met him. He came to a live event and sat there with like a huge bottle of champagne. Mm. You know, like the meme bottles. He just sat there drinking it throughout the night. And he ended up being funnier than Cole for a couple of the jokes. And Cole was just like, mate, do you just want to come up and do this? You'd be better. Anyway, look forward to seeing Cigar Guy again. Let's go to the next one.
In response to Peter Robinson's video comment on episode 200. I don't think that Biden has the mental faculties to last long enough for that plan to be enacted. And even if they did try that, I don't think Kamala Harris will get reelected once.
Well, I mean, she wouldn't get re-elected in a free and fair election. Let's put it that way. And I'm looking forward to, I don't know if you've seen the statistic for the number of postal votes in any given American election. And Pew had a nice little graph of it steadily climbing up throughout the years.
Mm.
And then it gets to 2020. It goes to 40%.
Wow.
It's just like, I'm going to get this number wrong. I think it's around 20% or something. And it just jumps to 40% of all election ballots were postal votes. So I guess we'll see what that percentage is next year. Well, not next year, next election.
For Kamala Harris, because he's right, Biden won't last. Mm. So
let's go for the next one.
Good morning from Ontario. Ask and you shall receive. You can find all the information you would want to know about the PPC at peoplespartyofcanada.ca/platform. Some bangers include freedom of expression, firearms, and Canadian identity. But for today, I will end with this. The rights of Canadians to freely hold and express beliefs are being eroded at an alarming rate under the Trudeau government. Some of its recent decisions even require Canadians to renounce their most deeply held moral convictions and express opinions they disagree with.
All right. It's good that they have that in, yeah. I've put a link to that so I can go read it my own time. I do actually, I'm one of those weird guys who actually likes reading the policies because you get a feel for what the people really believe when you start reading a party's policies, I feel. It's like when you read the Labour Party manifesto, you just start laughing.
Yeah.
Because it's so ridiculous. Let's go for the next one.
Hey, Lotus Eaters, Tony D and Little Joan here with another legend of the Pines, Jerry Monahan. Jerry was a wizard who had two magical axes that could chop up wood for him. And he had a lot of other strange powers too, including that he could take off his own head and give himself a haircut. If you'd like to read more besides my books, you might want to check out Pine Barrens, Legends, Lores, and Lies by William McManus.
Cool. I love... Is your dog called Joan of Arc? Is that why you have the little thing there to tell us what the name is? But sorry, I like the dogs. Dogs are good.
I can't remember if it was Callum or Josh who was noting that people of our ilk are a rare breed in Canada. I certainly feel like that is the case. I was born here, and it's very difficult finding neighbors and friends who I would think of as role models for my children in the future. So to the person who keeps advertising the PPC, do you want to be friends? Because I'll take as many as I can get.
There's one thing I kind of found interesting about joining a political party when we first got involved with UKIP, and then me and Colin were not, you've been there for ages, and so forth, is that you do start to meet lots of people that you actually never thought existed.
Oh, yeah.
Like the strength of feeling about an issue or a way of thinking that you would never have guessed there are so many people who agree with you, and then you finally get that nexus.
But you get, I mean, a great collection of, I mean, I was thinking I would never have met Dank if it wasn't for UKIP. It's like, it's just amazing how a political party can pull together so many diverse individuals, and you find you kind of congregate around a desire for freedom and change.
Yeah. I still remember Gerard Batten and Count Dankula on the stage together. It was just a hell of a sight.
Show,
Anyway, let's go for the next one.
Addressing this whole dating debate, I did a poll of men and women that I knew of dating age, and all the men preferred to do chasing because otherwise they felt emasculated, and all the women preferred to be chased, generally, because that way they felt cherished as a woman. I was wondering about your guys' thoughts on that. Two, to John's point, where does the whole fertility aspect of dating fit into we're going to change as we get older?
Also, what's with the beard? You've never worn that before, as far as I'm aware. I'm assuming that's because, you know, oil guy and everyone else has a beard, so you're showing them up now with a longer one. But, okay. As for... Should it be that men chase and women get chased because that's masculine and feminine? I mean, I guess so, but this isn't really my area of expertise anyway. John, do you have an opinion on the question about fertility?
Hang on, what was she saying?
Oh, I can't remember the exact question now, but it was about how fertility is going
to... affect dating. Well, yeah, you have to plan ahead because, like, say, if you're about to date a woman in their 30s, and then you think about you actually got to go out with them a few years and then get married and then have children, you are hitting the wall already. And the fertility rate, I think, drops by about 30% or possibly of conceived by 35. So you're really pushing it. So, yeah, which is why sensible older men in their 30s go for young women, generally speaking. And that's true. And that's why women don't realise they already hit the wall when they're in their 30s, because it takes a few years to actually get to know each other and then start a family. So it's actually worse than it is.
John's our resident expert on fertility and whatnot.
I think he should write a whole book on it.
You know, there are actually professors of fertility. I mean, you could go for it. Like, anyway, let's go to the next one.
This one is for Callum. It's called Schloss Neuschwanstein.
Schloss von Barnstein? Schloss von Barnstein? Is that close enough? It's this castle in Germany that looks like something out of Disneyland.
Yeah, been there. Yeah, yeah.
You've been there?
Yeah, yeah. I've got
a
pronunciation
because a German wife... Okay. What was it like there? Like, what did you get to do?
We drove through Germany and we visited a couple of castles, and that was one of them. So we did a whole day of castle trips. It's amazing, fantastic. It's no wonder Disney have taken it as iconic. And so it's, yeah, impressive. But again, not that old.
Are there any geese in there?
Not that I recall.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't looking for geese, but no.
I remember hearing a rumor. I don't even know if it's true, that one of the guys who owned the castle back in the Middle Ages or whatever used to let geese run around because he was a bit of a lunatic.
Oh.
But I would have thought if that's true that they'd still do it because, I mean, you know, tradition.
It may have been another den. We missed it the day we were there. Don't know.
If not, if that does turn out to be true, I feel like anyone who lives nearby should just reintroduce that idea to whoever runs it and be like, well, come on. It'll be interesting. The people visiting would like it. I mean, the worst that's going to happen is you're going to clean up some of the geese nonsense, but yeah. Can't be the worst thing in the world. Anyway, let's go for the next one.
Good afternoon, boys. Also, Callum, I did read Mao's Famine. I know you said that you completely were disgusted when they were eating little children. And that's towards the end of the book. I kind of already backed out when they were saying that women were having prolapsed vaginas and people are defecating in newspapers and throwing them out the window. Yeah, that book is just, it's just horrid. Socialism is absurdly evil.
Yeah, it really is. For anyone who hasn't read Mao's Great Famine, you really should, especially, or watch the book club we're about to have released on it, because it's the perfect way to make someone wake up to why socialism is a bad idea. When you just confront them with, here's the Communist Party of China saying, we're going to enact socialism, and then they enact it, and what happens? The worst human horrors you could ever imagine. And he's right. I mean, there's a lot of things that would make you just give up on the concept in the earlier chapters. But when it got to the cannibalism section, I don't know, I felt like that was the most hard-hitting. Mm. When there's a story in there, for example, in which this old woman... no, not the old woman. There was a guy who was dying because of the famine. So, and how famines work is it kills the elderly and the young, and it kills the young first, then the elderly, and then goes down the generations. That's the way it does. So all the graveyards are filled with children.
Mm.
And if there's no food, you've eaten all the bark on the trees, there are no weeds in between the cobblestones, where do you go? And a bunch of people started digging up graves to eat the remains. So, of course, they're there day after day eating toddlers. Bits of toddlers as well, because of course most of the bodies decompose, so you only get bits of it that are even edible, let's say, that won't kill them. And so the commune started realizing that all the graves were being robbed, so they had people guard the graves to make sure no one stole corpses to eat. And then he was reduced to having to murder people who were passing through the village because, well, he couldn't eat the corpses anymore. So then they found him with the dead bodies. He'd murdered, I think it was a child that was passing through. And that's just one example. And there are just list and list of example that Frank Dacotta puts in there. And it's absolutely stellar research. Like, the archives in Beijing are closed, but all the archives throughout the country are apparently just sitting there, and no one cares. So he's just gone down there and just been like, right, okay, give me the police reports. They're just reading the police reports of people talking about, yeah, they just ate this guy, and then, you know, this guy ate that. And it's like, yeah, it's absolutely horrible. Go and give it a read, and watch the book club when it comes out. I can see John's trying to give me the pronunciation of the castle, but I'm not going to be able to do it with the text, because it's going to come up bad either way, but I'll have to look it up afterwards.
G'day, guys. I'm on a hike today. I've been going on long walks every single day since this bloody lockdown started because I can't use the gym. Here's the summit of Mount Taylor for you guys. This is Woden Valley, where I live. Here's the other side of the mountain. Sometimes we get kangaroos coming up here, but unfortunately not today, guys. Just very nice views.
That does look nice, but the thing is, I wouldn't really want to go for a walk in Australia. I feel like it's too risky. Maybe that's just because I've never been to Australia. I don't know how bad it really is, but just everything that's poisonous seems to live there. Yeah. Although That chap there, you won't know, but he's was trying to organize going to some place to sell a bunch of his books and his merch as well. And then one case, so Australia locked down, and now he's stuck there. I think it's New South Wales that's locked down or whichever, but my Australian geography is not great. But anyway, let's go to the written comments on here. So I need to make some announcements, so I'm being told. So if you're writing comments, please keep them adherence to UK law, because I know noncery is the kind of thing that everyone has an opinion on, let's say, and many of those opinions we can't have published because they're against UK law on incitement to violence, let's say. So please keep everything under that line, not over it, because that's our problem. It doesn't harm anyone else. Let's start with Britain's full. I just love that Desmond Tsui was just like, yeah, Britain's full. Get stuffed. I mean, the only thing that would have made it better if you started it with F off.
Yeah.
You know, the meme. So UK Minarchist says, are we being distracted by the 20,000 per annum asylum seekers? Truth is, we've been growing our Muslim population around 350,000 per annum by legal means. We now have minorities in our own... we are now minorities in our own major cities and towns, and it's not the refugees that are swamping us. That's true. Legal migration is the largest migration for the UK, not refugees. The specific interest in this one is because of how barbaric Afghanistan is. I mean, both sides of that conflict think that noncery is fine, in which case I really don't want to import, you know, 10 of them, never mind 20,000, because of the problems that's going to come with that. But
I'm just looking at, do you want Afghan culture in the UK? The other side is, as this person mentioned, do you want Islamic culture in the UK? But I think the demographic change is, over the last 15 years, we've seen 11% increase in the UK population at large, but the Muslim population have gone up 107%. So they've gone up 10 times.
Yeah.
So it's, things are changing rapidly.
Every census, for example, so every 10 years there's a census, the Pakistani population since 1970 has doubled.
Wow.
And presumably they're going to double this time around as well. So they'll be up to about 2.2 million from 1.1 million in 2010. So, forward to that. Alpha of the Betas. Whites are oppressors, non-whites are victims, but race doesn't exist. Yeah, I love racial diversity. Also, I celebrate our racial differences because we're all the same. Leftist ideology. Gotta believe everything at once. I mean, they really do. I mean, like, the 1984, I know everything's kind of cliche to call everything 1984, but the subjects in there, like, doublethink, you do find them in politics, but I feel like the left just exemplifies them perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, with the ideas you have to believe diversity is our strength, but also race doesn't exist, or race is our, you know, all the rest of it. 71% says, not sure why is everyone freaking out about the Taliban taking over. I was reliably informed that Islam is a religion of peace. Therefore, a group of austere religious scholars will bring peace, love, truth, and progress. Certainly will, at least according to the chief of staff for Britain's defense.
Yeah.
Just some country boys.
It's funny because they call it literalist form of Islam. I've heard others saying it's true Islam. But then the difficulty is, yeah, trying to define what actually Islam teaches and what it doesn't teach, and then what one you adopt. But you have each country adopts a slightly different form. And the Afghani Talibani one is not one that we want.
I find it incredibly absurd, though, when you see Westerners, especially someone like Stella Creasy or Theresa May or Tony Blair, who are like, yeah, that's not real Islam, as if they have any authority whatsoever on the topic. I mean, they've been given a speech that has some quotes from the Quran that have been cherry-picked. That's about it.
Well, Lord Pearson often gives quotes and they say, no, you're taking it out of context. What context do you want to take it in? The Quran doesn't have context. Yeah. It doesn't have stories. It's just random statements. So come back and what is the context that makes it okay to say such and such? And they can't.
Yeah. I love how Lord Pearson like is someone who's actually spent the time reading. And yeah, when he comes in and is like, yeah, so can we talk about Islam? And they're just like, no whatsoever. Because you're wrong. Talk. Because you don't know anything about Islam, unlike me. So Tristan Armstrong says, why would democracy be forced on Italians and Germans, but not on the Islamic world? If you put iron atoms in proximity to a permanent magnet, eventually the iron will pick up magnetism. Copper never will. It's not the fault of the copper that it doesn't become magnetic. It's your fault for mistaking copper for iron. Yeah, what do you make of this argument? Because I remember Christopher Hitchens made this argument before the invasions, that people used to say of the Eastern European world that democracy wouldn't work there. If the Soviets fell, it would be stupid for us to try and implement it. And seems to be largely false. Poland's doing pretty good. And Hungary's doing pretty good, all the rest of it. But the Islamic world, the argument was also made that, well, you add the Islamic difference and there's going to be huge problems there. What do you make of that argument?
I mean, you don't have democracy. You don't have that sense of individual freedom in Islam. So it doesn't really fit there. But then democracy gives us Boris, it gives us Macron, it gives us Biden. Does it really work in the way I'm the more and more I've looked at politics, the more I'm thinking, actually, although we're told it's a better system than anything else, is it really the best we've got? Because it doesn't always seem. And of course, in America, it's not just pure representative democracy. They've got other checks and balances and safety measures within that. So it's not the tyranny of the majority. Mm. But I still am yet to be persuaded that it's perfect. And yeah, why should we impose how we think the world should work on every other country? If they want to just blow each other and kill each other, maybe that's how they do things.
Let them find their own way to democracy. Yes. And if they don't do it, then whatever.
Yes.
I think one thing we definitely have noticed with Western democracies is the US Constitution is like the gold standard for stopping them becoming tyrannical.
Mm.
Because, I mean, you just look at Britain or France, for example. France especially right now, yeah, with the vaccine passport system they're doing. Nuts. Yeah. They're absolutely nuts. Anyway, but I remember Christopher Hitchens was making the point that, oh, no, we're going to Iraq and we'll set it up as a democracy and everything will be fine. It's like,
no.
God, if he was alive. Mm. Justin B. says, now, I'm not saying that Biden wants to destroy the West. Big doubt. But if he did, that way he handled Afghanistan couldn't really have done much more damage if he tried. America's reputation is in tatters. And there is now going to be a flood of potentially millions of refugees that are going to spread out into the US and in particularly Europe, which, of course, means most will find their way to the UK. Labour will be happy with the extra votes since they'll blame the Tories for this. Yeah, I don't see how Labour loses, to be honest. They're having a great time out of all this.
Yep.
Get to advocate for reparations to the Taliban. No one cares. They just get to keep carrying on forwards. Mass migration crisis. It's great for them. Destructions of the West reputation. Great for them. It's a bad day.
It is. And Labour don't have to do anything to win. They just have to let the Tories keep screwing up. And that's often how an opposition can work, especially if you don't have a strong opposition. You just sit there and wait until the government blows itself up. And then you step in and say, we told you you shouldn't do that. We'll be better than you. And the country thinks, okay, maybe you will be. Because we've got short-term memories.
Alpha of the Betas says, leaving 2,500 troops in Afghanistan to secure bases and continue to provide Afghan forces with satellite-based intelligence and air support was all it took to avoid this situation and bolster 20 years, $1 trillion to justify tens of thousands of lives lost. Biden backstabbed the Afghan military. They were trained to operate with air support and intelligence and then cut off in violation of Trump's agreement. No wonder they're deeply demoralized. They've lost 50,000 troops fighting the Taliban already. Without support, they're at a severe disadvantage. I've heard this argument. The MP yesterday who made it for Strategic Patience that, well, we could have just kept a few thousand there and, you know, forever they're basically going to be there.
Mm.
But it means that we don't get a Taliban victory. At least, and you know, Chinese relations and all the rest of it. I can see that argument, and a chap I was with yesterday from the Conservatives made an argument that the Americans essentially set up every country they build up to have this military doctrine of having the capacity of an American economy.
Yeah.
And of course they don't. So you don't have the capacity to build those planes if they lost them, for example. It's not a bad argument, I'll give it that, but I just don't agree because on the basis that I'm not sure I want to be there at all. I'm not really too sure what the difference is between the regime we had in place and the Taliban, to be frank. I mean, these people weren't allies of us. They're not the kind of people we want to be involved with anyway. I suppose
slightly better than the Taliban.
Yeah.
But then you look at Pakistan. Should we do the same with Pakistan to stabilize that? Well, I guess then you're looking at Taiwan and China as well. You need to go and hold. So where do you stop? And what gives you the right to think that how you see the world is the perfect model for every nation?
But also, where does it stop is a great point, because I mean, like you're saying, you wouldn't just have to send troops to Pakistan. We'd have to invade them, overthrow the current government because it's an Islamist government, and then sit there forever as well. Have to do the same with Iran, have to do, you know, where does that end?
And do we go into Australia, fight for their freedom? They don't have freedom.
We should, if we're going to invade anywhere and fight for their freedom, it should be Australia. Just letting them die. Carl says, one of the most single heartbreaking videos I have seen out of all of this was one, the young girls of Afghanistan simply breaking down into tears and coming face to face with the realization that there is literally no one who cares about the females of this area. Please show your audience this video because this will drive home how destructive it was to pull out in such a manner that Biden did. But also it makes you realize that what utter pieces of S the regular Afghani man is. I don't know if John has this link. I see Discordia's put it in there for him to get. Yeah, it is pretty awful to be an Afghani woman right now, I bet. It's absolutely true. I must admit, I don't want to sound like an MRA or anything, but I keep thinking of the stories of the police raping boys and this being public, and no one ever talked about it. No one ever was like, you know, the state of Afghani boys being abused like this. It's just, whatever.
But it's awful to be a female in Afghanistan. It's not very nice to be a female in most Islamic nations.
Yeah.
There are varying degrees of restriction according to Sharia law. So the problem is it's not just the culture of Afghanistan. Then you're looking at a religious belief of, 1.5 billion people.
So I don't know if we have this video up, but this is the video, and it's a lady filming herself talking about, I presume, the inhumane treatment the Taliban are going to do to her and other women, which, yeah, but as you mentioned, I mean, this is the situation in most Islamic countries.
What about China and the inhumane treatment they do of individuals? Do we just send the troops in and...
Sudan?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't think it's a good enough argument for military interference.
And I would say America as well. We need to... work on Biden, so. Yeah.
I mean, even Biden actually made the argument. I mean, you weren't here for, but there's an interview he gave like a week before it fell, in which the American interviewer is saying, yes, but what about women's rights in Afghanistan? And he just responds with, I'm not wasting American lives on women's rights in Afghanistan. She's not doing it. And he didn't like that. I just realized we're running out of time, so I'll go for one from each of the other two segments. So JJHW says, the grooming gang report was a whitewash. It proves just how treasonous our government is. What do you make of that?
Yeah, not completely. It showed, but actually what it showed was the failure of the Home Office to follow ministers. So actually Priti Patel and Prasidji Javi did want this report to come out. They wanted to understand what was happening. They did want to do some good. And the Home Office staff said no. And they just sat in their hands. And there was one story that came out in the Mail. And I think Priti Patel ordered her officials to begin to produce it. And then 3 months later, she demanded to know what they had done. And they showed her like a dozen PowerPoints they'd put together. She goes, this isn't the report. What? So they actively were blocking, and that's the civil service. And what do you do if you're a government minister, you want to achieve something, but your staff refuse to do it, and you're a bit screwed?
Well, you need to purge them.
Yeah.
Conservatives purge, don't have to do that as a party, I think.
Dominic Cummings wanted to do that, but sadly he's not there.
But I mean, that's the usefulness of having what was released, was it showed the situation as it was.
It was a step.
Initially, they were going to present nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing was going to go public.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll just end with this last comment from What Have We Learned. So Freewill2112 says, Country Boys, Taliban, the musical. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, on that bombshell, I suppose it's time to end the show. I need to stop saying Clarkson's outro.
You do.
Need new outro. Anyway, if you want more from us, go to lotusears.com, get access to the premium content. We will have the book club as soon as possible about Mal's Great Famine. Please do enjoy that. Otherwise, thank you and goodbye. We'll see you tomorrow.